Okay. So, let's crack ourselves up again. Okay, you really need a, what they say in Yiddish, health cup on this subject. Why the Yiddish expression for health cup means hold your head. I'm not really sure why. But it means like, you know, pay attention and keep in mind a whole, like keep in, concentrate from beginning to end and hold a lot of facts together. Okay, so let's remind ourselves. The Yerushalmi starts off attributing Tosefet Shvi'i to a pasuk. Right? Which pasuk? Unclear, but a pasuk. Right? Which, if you are influenced by the Bavli, already leads you to believe that we are talking about Rabbi Akiva. The problem is then the Gemara transitions to a question, which is, why doesn't it apply nowadays? Gemara's answer is, we voted it out of existence. Right? That's Rabbi Yochanan quoting what he thinks happened in the Beit Din of Rabbi Gamliel. What's the problem? Right, and the Gemara says, well, you can't do that. You're not greater than Chacham of a Minyan. Good. Interpretive problem now is how do we understand the Yerushalmi? So the Pnei Moshe has a trouble because the Pnei Moshe has several assumptions. First of all, the Pnei Moshe has a general rule, whenever possible, tries to squish the Gemara together. Yes, try to, or interpret the Yerushalmi in light of the Bavli. How about that? Squish them together. But it, sure, squish them together gets the point across. Yes, he tries to conflate them. Okay? Therefore, that's problem one for him. Problem two is assuming, like the Rambam, that the limitations of Chachma Uminyan, right, are for rabbinic law. That means that by the middle of that sugya, as soon as we say, can't you vote it out of existence, answer, right? You can't vote it out of existence. You're not greater than Chachma, you don't have, right, you're not greater in wisdom and number, is that we've transitioned without telling anybody to rabbinic law. What's the solution for the Bnei Moshe? We start talking about Rabbi Akiva, and then the Gemara's answer essentially is Bipasma and Rabbi Ishmael. The kasha on this is, the obvious problem on this is, yes, it never happened. Slight problem, right? The Gemara never quotes Rabbi Akiva, never quotes Rabbi Ishmael, doesn't even quote the, in our gears, in our Gemara, it doesn't even quote the same pasuk as Rabbi Akiva, problem, right? Now, yesterday what we did was we tried to justify why the Rambam thinks that Gadol Menu with Chacham of Minyan is limited to Dirabanan, right, and not the, right, so not the reinterpretation of Torah. We gave a mashal from American law, right? It's the same reason that a Supreme Court, in interpreting the Constitution, can very easily switch what is now, from a legal vantage point, considered constitutional law, right? All it takes is a vote, and that's why it gets so heated in all these hearings, right? That's why, right, consistently, right? I mean, I don't know how much you guys watch the, you know, the congressional hearings for Supreme Court nominees, right? But it's always the same thing, which is different versions of, let's see if we can get you to tell us how you're going to vote on Roe v. Wade. And the judges saying it's some version of, I have to judge it in the merit of the case, I don't tell you in advance what I'm going to say, right? Because Congress cares about the results, because that's their job, right, is to make laws, and therefore they care about the results, right? And if until they actually make an amendment that says abortion is legal or illegal, right, the best they can do is hope that the interpretation of the Constitution will follow what they wish were the actual Constitution, right? And a judge, who, at least on paper, their job is to interpret the Constitution, will say, that's not my job. Your job is to make the laws. My job is to interpret it, and I'm not going to tell you in advance how I'm going to interpret it, because guess what? That would be you trying to legislate through interpretation, which is not a thing that's supposed to happen. Right? This happens, it doesn't matter who that is. It happened with, you know, with Amy Coney Barrett, it happened with Ruth Bader Ginsburg, right? 1.5 million years ago, right? How long was she a judge? What was she, 90 plus? It was long. I remember when she was sworn in, right? No, that's not true. I remember my parents talking about when she was sworn in and when my father's friend went to the inauguration. That was what I, you know, That was a long, long time ago. How long is it? Yeah. Yeah, I remember her talking, right, my parents talking about how Bob Kaplan went to the inauguration. But he also is not. This was a long time ago. What we started on yesterday was to say, okay, if we don't share the same emotional assumptions about the obsession with squashing, to use Josh's very formal language there, squashing the Bavli and the Yerushalmi together, and we aren't convinced by the Rambam that the limitations of Chachma Minyan only apply to the Rabbanan, then we can open up new avenues of interpretation. What can we do? We can say, and here Kobe was the Baal HaMemra, right? They're talking about
understanding.
Very good, right? Well, maybe we have to say that the limitations of Chachma Minyan apply even to biblical interpretation, right? That even when it comes to interpreting it, you can't just do whatever you want. Right? Which, to be fair, once we read the Mishnah, does the Mishnah distinguish between Derabanan and Deoraita? No. And also, let's be honest, right? Why is it, as we said yesterday, why is it that besides for people's personal political choices, right, and proclivities and whatever, as to whether they should overturn Roe v. Wade, they shouldn't, right? I mean, besides the people who say, right, you hear two types of arguments with Roe v. Wade, right? One is the generic, is the local issues, right? Which is pro-life, pro-choice, right? Right? What else do you hear? Right? You also hear the more systemic issues, which is, for the last 40 years, 50 years, people have been functioning under the assumption that it's legal. Now, overnight, you're going to make it illegal, right? That also is, right, at least legal problems, because what do they keep saying? Oh, people aren't going to know where to go, and they're going to continue to do abortions, right? They're just going to do it illegally in an unsafe way. What are they saying, right? One of the tainas against it, again, legitimate or not, I don't want to get into it, I'm using this as a mashal, right, is stability in a legal system is important, regardless of whether you're dealing with a law, right, or the interpretation thereof. Right? Stability is important. Right? Right? Stability is important. It allows people to plan, right?
It depends on what you value, I guess.
What?
If you value stability over, like, having the right law.
Right, but this is an argument. But I'm just saying, this is an argument, right? Meaning, stability is valuable in and of itself. Right? It is. Right? That doesn't mean it's the only value. Right? So, again, Thomas Sowell likes this example, right? He's a conservative economist at Stanford, right? But he says, listen, Jews in Europe, in the last, you know, for a few hundred years, had very, 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 and also in Muslim countries, right, were very limited in the type of businesses they were allowed to engage in by law, right? There was discrimination, right? No doubt about it, which is bad. Nevertheless, many Jews became very, very wealthy. Not all, some of them were impoverished, right? But many Jews became very wealthy within those frameworks. Why? Because the discrimination was so enshrined in law that, for better or for worse, they knew where they stood for the next 100 years, right?
And they knew how to manipulate it.
And then, yes, right? Meaning, his point is discrimination was bad, right? But the benefit to stable discrimination, right, was that the Jews figured it out, right? And on the other hand, right, he contrasts this with, for example, societies like America, where it's not about discrimination, right? Forget discrimination for a moment. But simply, in eras where there's a lot of change over simply, how much money does a bank have to lend out, right? How much money do they have to keep in reserves, right? Inflation, right? Right? What do banks tend to do? Not lend out money. Why? Because without stability, regardless, without discrimination, maybe inflation is happening for good reasons, whatever, In the end of the day, they don't know how much their money is going to be worth when they lend it out, right? Meaning they lend it out at 2% interest, but they don't know yet whether inflation is going to be 3%, right? And they're just not going to lend out money, and capital is just going to freeze, right? Which is happening. Exactly. Right. His point is, right, that you have to distinguish between two things, right? One is whether the law is a good law or a bad law, right? The second, right, a fair law or not fair law. The second is whether there's stability, right? Both of those independently can create problems, right? Obviously, you have both. It's the worst, right? Right? He's not endorsing it. He's just, but the point is that you need to, right, in addition to the Roe v. Wade question of whether you want there to be, right, whether you think it should or should not be legal, the second question is, whenever you change something, it has to be done with... Correct. So with legislation, you can do that. You can roll out legislation slowly over the course of 5 years, right? 10 years. But if you overturn a Supreme Court decision, right, then it's the equivalent, functionally, of passing a bill that was rolled out overnight.
Why would you value
right?
Like,
what?
Why would you value stability in terms of, like, you know, the, like, thought?
Well, I've just told you that stability is important, right? Even in bad law, stability is important.
I mean, no, I understand that. But
right.
I mean, you would never say, like, oh, yeah, it's the wrong thing, but we're just keeping it. Like,
of course you would. Of course you would.
Where is it?
All the time. We do that all the time.
Have you got
it? In what? In halakha? In secular law?
No, halakha.
What do you mean? What do you think? What do you think us saying that Xera stands even if the reason no longer applies, it does?
That's purely because of stability?
I mean...
Is that not because of, like, some sort of, like...
You know, I mean, sure, if you want to... Right, so a lot of modern thinkers love the Gra and say, aha, well, the reason you keep Xera out even when the reason doesn't apply is because there are other reasons you don't know about, right? Yes, Gemara never says that. The simple shot is that you keep it because it's the law, and stability is intrinsically important, right? I mean, there may also be other reasons, but stability is important. It just is. I mean, it is. I mean, law has to function. Society has to function. Instability by itself is bad, right? That doesn't mean it's not ever worth the cost. Right? You see,
No, but that's just more, like, a different, I feel like it's weird to say, like, oh, the secular law, I mean, with secular law...
But rabbinic law, why?
Why? It can never change, more or less.
No, it can. It's just hard to change. It's not possible. Right? You need God's lament of a couple of minion. Meaning, we're not saying that it can't change. We're saying we make it hard, right? Right? Meaning, saying you make something hard to change because stability is a value isn't saying stability is the only value or saying that change is never warranted. It's just saying that you shouldn't jump to change. Right? So coming back to Chacham Minyan, that's exactly what I'm saying, is that in the end of the day, why would you say that you need Gadol Menon Chacham Minyan even under Oraita? Because in the end of the day, we're not saying you can't change. We're just saying that we make it hard to change. Right? Because change change is problematic. That doesn't mean it's not worth it, right? It just, you need to make sure it's worth it, right? Right, that's all I'm saying, right? Look, give you a different example.
What would be the, like, potential unstable things that happen if
what do you mean? If it was very easy for a basin to overturn a law that a previous one said, that means the law yesterday was usher, today is mutter, tomorrow is usher, today is mutter, right?
No, but it makes sense if you make something harder when you're making something usher, but making something mutter shouldn't be something that should be hard to do.
What do you mean? Making something mutter is also, what do you mean?
If you say that now you're allowed to take my son's Shabbos because you don't have a problem that you're mixing up your
credit. I'm sorry. No. Making something mutter is just as destabilizing as making something usher.
Well, won't change as much because
that's not true at all. That's not true. That is not true. Making something mutter can be just as destabilizing. What are you talking about? Right?
I don't see that happening.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? If I got up tomorrow, right? How many of you are Ashkenazim? Everyone?
Yeah,
everyone? Okay. Tomorrow, I'll give you an example, okay? I was, 5-6 years ago, I was giving a pre-Pesach series at Beth Emeth, which is one of the conservative shuls in Toronto, a bit old school conservative, okay? Yeah, old school conservative. Like, there's still, you know, some people there are Shomer Shabbos, almost all of them are Shomer Kashrus. Some of them are even Shomer Tara Mishpacha, like very old school. Okay? It happened to be that one day when I came in there, officially the Committee for Jewish Law and Standards, yeah, right, that's right, CJRS, right, the like Vad HaRabban, the Psak, no, Vad HaRabban was the Israeli version, the high court of the conservative movement, whatever, Paskin, that Kitniot was officially over. Okay? What? Wait, whoa. That's not the end of my story. Right? I come in. It's a shiur mostly of like old traditional Jewish grandmothers. Right? Again, these are not Orthodox people. Right? These are traditional, right? Old school conservative. Right? But these are not like, right? These are not the people you would expect, like Kalev and Kacham. It's not like they keep all of them, right? They, whatever. I have never seen such wrath in my life. In my life. How dare these rabbis? They didn't kick out his mother. My grandmother didn't use Gideon. I kid you not. They were all like, we are only going to eat with the CORs and this kosher, which is like the quite strict Toronto Orthodox Joshua's thing. They're like very strict. Who are these people? What do they think? I've been cooking this way for years. What do they think?
They can keep it out there for themselves. They want.
Yes, and they did. But you'll tell me why. It's so easy. Because things that are usher, you learn, right? You learn. Think about it. If you, right, you learn to live within a certain thing, right? The foods that we eat, right? How did it become that Pesach, right? Why is it that Pesach has its unique foods, right? That we, you know, it's like in my wife's family, they always said, right? It's like, why is it that baked goods that taste good on the last day of Pesach, as soon as Seder Kochavim hits on Motzei Pesach, it was the most delicious cookie 3 hours ago. But the second that Pesach is over, right, those belong in the garbage because it only makes sense within constraints, right? The constraints are gone and suddenly it's not good anymore. People learn to live within restrictions, and when you just throw that off, it takes a while, right? There is a momentum to Kula, there's a momentum to Chumra, and it is destabilizing, right? Right? It is wrong to think that everyone in the world, I mean, that attitude, which I think some people have, right, or think other people have, which is that everyone is secretly wishing that everything was mutter, and therefore saying something's mutter can't be destabilizing, that's not true. Right? It's just not true. People live their lives within certain expectations, both those that are permissive and those that are limited. Right? And simply being able to turn, right? Meaning, right, on a very simple level, right? If this year we said kidney out is us, or next year we said mutter is us, right? Or, right? Right? So that means this year, Pesach, you got to figure out, right? It's like, on Pesach, I can tell my kids who basically live on off hummus, right? We don't have hummus on Pesach. Right? If 1 year, you know, we decide we're not keeping kidney out and having chlomus, and then the next year we say we are, right? We're back to kidney out.
The mutter problem is inside.
No. No, but the problem isn't usher to mutter. The problem is stability.
Okay, but if you make it mutter and it's really hard to make it usher again, that shouldn't really leave stability.
No. First of all, no. Right? First of all, as I just gave you from this case, being mutter something also destabilizes.
Maybe an outlier case?
So. No, not an outlier case. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Fine, you're right. This is not destabilizing. Tomorrow, in the entire world, I am removing speed limits. You can drive however you want. I promise you there won't be accidents. It's not destabilizing to be Matir. Every highway in the world is now the Autobahn. What are you, crazy? What is making things mutter is just as destabilizing, right? Just like if tomorrow I said in the Autobahn you can only go 70 kilometers an hour and the police will stop you if you go more than that, that would destabilize things. If I tell you that every highway is the Autobahn, right?
That's something that can lead to...
Well, you just told me that making things mutter isn't destabilizing. It's only the possibility of turning it the other way. That's not true, right? If I tomorrow said there are no speed limits in the world, right? And don't worry, right? They won't destabilize. No, stability is a value, right? There's a reason that we... Let me give you a very simple example, okay? Why is it that when a bill is passed, it usually doesn't take effect overnight? We've decided this is a good thing to do, right? Why was it that when Canada decided to legalize marijuana, they announced it like 3 years in advance? And for 3 years, everywhere you went, every government building had huge signs of what you should expect and how they're going to roll it out and which stores they were going to roll it out. You're making things mutter. And you think that marijuana should be mutter in Canada. So why did it take 3 years? Why don't you just overnight say, mutter?
No,
this is after the period of contesting. That took forever.
So people get fined, they're being against cops.
Meanwhile, right? What? You have to get used to it, right? Because it's destabilizing.
So the thing is, for what, like, how much do you value that?
A lot! I just told you, that's what this rule tells you.
At the end of the day, if you know, or miss something, but if you did something to us, or, and all these people are doing something that you think is us, or, like, how can you say, I'm going to try and slow, like...
That's not what we said. We just said, you got to... I didn't say you can't do it, right? Government of Copenhagen doesn't say you can't do it. And in fact, when it happens, it'll happen overnight.
Yeah.
Right? But it can't happen. But it takes, right? But it takes effort and not regular effort. Right?
Yeah.
Right? We're not saying it can't happen. We're saying, fine. I'll take out the word stability. Let me try a different word. You have to be sure. Saying government and Chachmaminyan means you can't just, right, yesterday they voted 36 to 35, and guess what? One of the judges died, and now it's 35 to 36, right? Right? That's not how you change law, right? You've got to be sure before you change law. Is that better? Now it's not just stability, it's certainty. Is that better? Right? Right? Okay, right? The point is, but even saying you have to be certain provides stability, right? If we say that you don't have to be, right? If we say that you don't have to be that certain, right? You just have to be 51% certain, then there's a lack of stability. Those are related, right? You don't like stability as a value in itself? Fine. Stability is generated because we require more certainty than is provided by 51%. How about that?
Stability could also be generated if it didn't switch off that much.
But how do you know it's going to switch that much? Right? If a particular interpretation of the Torah was adopted by 36 members of the Sanhedrin, and there are 10 members of the Sanhedrin at the moment who are 99 years old, right? You can probably expect that in the next few years there's going to be a lot of turnover. And since it was a swing vote of one, each time, it
but
could
if,
be...
If you only make it that one way is hard to do, it's still going to create stability.
But why would we do that? Why would we give preference to one direction of interpretation? Why would we give preference to Akula or preference of Rechumra?
Yeah.
Right? Right? Why would we do that? Right? If we require certitude or we require right stability, right, that should be true in both directions.
So basically, you say that.
You might not like this, but my point is, it's not irrational to say what Kobe said, right? All this was come back to what Kobe said, which was, it's not crazy to say that even when it comes to biblical interpretation, we don't just say, well, yeah, you're all answerable to the Torah, so it's enough to have a vote of 36 to 35, and if we change the stock tomorrow, big deal. Right? There's a logic to saying you can overturn it, but which means you need a wall. Fine. Should I translate it differently? Which means if you want to turn over biblical law, right, you need to have a broader consensus and more expertise than the previous court. How does that sound? Suddenly sound reasonable?
I mean, basically, though.
I think that's not crazy, right? It's not necessarily true, but it's not crazy.
Sorry.
Is it really? I mean, is it crazy?
It's not crazy.
Okay.
But I'm just trying to, like...
By the way, why are we saying all this? Remember, just so we don't... I understand we might have gotten lost at this point. Why are we saying all this? We're simply saying this because in the Yerushalmi, if you think that it's at all plausible that the limitations of Chachma Minyan or consensus and expertise requirements are true not just for legislation but for interpretation, then you can say that our entire Yerushalmi is going within the position that it's De'oraita, and nevertheless, it's not so easy to vote it out of existence. That's all, right? All this is coming down to that one line, right? I don't think that's crazy, right?
So you've got consensus values, like potentially doing the wrong thing for a longer period of time if we have a short answer versus just...
Yes, yes. You want me to give you an example of someone who says this explicitly? Fine, the Ron. The Ron says, okay, in a very radical piece, the Ron says, why do we listen to the rabbis? Period. Ever. Like Sanhedrin, why do we listen to them? Why do we listen to them?
Because
we assume they know that what's right. Good. What happens when they are wrong? What happens to you? Let's say the Sanhedrin said something is mutter and it's fact usher, and you, in good faith, follow them. What happens? Nope. The Ron says too bad. The Ron says sins are like spiritual poison. And just if the most expert doctor in the world told you this is not poison, and on the faith, on trusting the greatest expert in the world, you consumed it, what will happen to you? You will die. He says, guess what? This is the same, right? Averot are spiritual poisons. And even if the Sanhedrin Agadol tells you that it's safe, right, and it turns out it's not, guess what happens to your soul? Well, yes, it gets ill. It has now violated a sin and consumed spiritual poison. And he says, aha, then why do we listen to the rabbis if you're running the risk of consuming spiritual poison? And what's his answer? Exactly, he says, because the alternative is worse, right? The alternative is worse. That's all. The alternative is worse. At the end, he says, then he like hems and haws and he says, well, I mean, it's true, you're having spiritual poison, and yes, it should kill you, but God is more merciful. So God will miraculously save you from the spiritual poison because he wants to listen to the rabbis. He says that at the end, right? Right, that's right. But methodologically, what does he say? Why do you listen to the rabbis? Is it because they're always right? No. And if they get it wrong, is it their fault? I mean, sort of, but he says you have to bear the consequences, so why do you do it? Because sometimes we do things that are on balance better, even though it's the wrong thing to do.
If you make your machmer and everything for yourself, then you listen to the...
Do you know what we call someone who's machmer and everything?
An idiot.
Thank you. Who calls it an idiot?
I believe...
The Gemara. Yes. The Gemara says you are an idiot. In fact, you are an idiot who is groping around in the darkness. Hakseel b'choshe choleh. That is what you are. Someone who's machmer and everything is an idiot. That's what the Gemara says, not me. Right? No, you can't just be machmer and everything. And good luck being machmer and everything. Right? Being machmer always carries with it kula. What? Leniency. Right? I mean, many chumrot have implied leniency. It's very hard to always be machmer. What? If we insist, very simple, if we insist that you always buy the most machmer etrog, which will cost you 5 times the price, and buy the most mahadrim and a mahadrim and a mahadrim and a mahadrim meat, which will cost you 2x the price. Right? Right? How much money are you going to have left over for stuff? Yeah. But I was being machmer. Yes. And now the poor people are starving because you didn't think that we're on necessary chumras. Right? But feed them the etrog and your uber machmer meat. Yes, right? And starve yourself. I mean, right? Every kula has an implied chumra. Every chumra has an implied kula, right? There is no such thing as being machmir in everything. It's impossible. Not that there aren't people who try. There definitely are. At some point in yeshiva, there was one of my rabbeim like collecting. I think it was an email that was sent out many years ago. It was the chumra of the week, where someone would look for the newest chumra that someone came up with. Right? If you wanted to, you could. You could keep every chumra in the book. It'd be hard. Right? I could come up with fun ones. If you want, I'll come up with a chumra for you every day. Right? You can try keeping all of them. Right? We'll see how much fun your life is by the end of the chumras I can come up with. Even if I just did a few days of giving you chumra that I actually keep myself, your life might get more difficult very quickly. Right? But call the chumra if I came up with the creative chumra. I'm not telling you.
What?
Yes. 100%. 100%. I'm terrified. All right. I don't want you to keep all my chumra. Okay. Good. So, let's look at some positions who actually say this, that, not that my chumras are crazy, but that say that, yeah, these rules of chachma and minyan apply even by d'oraita, okay? So I gave you two examples, right? I gave you Melchot Shlomo and Rav Kook, okay? So let's try, in the time we have, to try to run through it, okay? We have a little bit, we have time now that Dardis is getting the masses for us. We don't have to finish it exactly on the 15th. Good. So first, Melechet Shlomo. Melechet Shlomo, first of all, says as follows. He says, "She'ein Beit Din Klomar. V'dafka shismoch alav yachola Beit Din atmo sheroeh divrei yachid eino lokeh otu svara lahalacha v'lasot ma'aseh afilu shlo b'shad asak. Shezeu karui bitul divrei amerubim v'akadmonim v'ein shum Beit Din yachola sot kein el em kein yegadol meno v'chokma uv'minyan." Okay. He says something very creative. I read through that fast, but I'll do it again. He says as follows. There's a difference between somech and mevatel. What's the difference between being somech on a shitat yachid and being mevatel, the decision of a previous beit din? So he says as follows. What does it mean to be mevatel, the decision of a previous beit din? To nullify it, meaning yesterday the law was Asur, and now the law from now on is mutar. What does it mean to be someich on a shitat yachid? To depend on them, meaning to say that the law is still fundamentally that normally is asur, but when push comes to shove, if absolutely necessary, we'll let you rely on a minority position temporarily due to exigency, right? Due to emergency circumstances. That's to be someich. Okay? Right, so let's read that again. Klomar, when can you rely on a minority position? Dafka sheyi smoch alav, to rely on him. Yachola beitin atmo shiro'eh divrei yachid, the court that sees that mean agrees with the position of the individual. Ein alokeh otas varla lahalacha, they're not taking that logic to be the law forever. V'lasot maaseh afilu shlo b'shar atak, and act on it even when it's not an emergency. Shizehu kari bitul divrei amirubin, because that would be nullifying the words of the majority. I'm Rubina Kadmonin, the earlier majority. The Ein Shum Beitin Yachol Asot Kein, Elam Kein Yei Gadol Mimena Mechachma V'Minyan. And no court can do that unless you have a wider consensus and more expertise. Right? Gadol Mimena Mechachma V'Minyan. Ela Lismo Hu Sheyesh Lo Rishut Bilvah. But to temporarily rely on the minority position, you are allowed to do. Therefore, the Mishnah comes and says, you cannot uproot. We allow you, even without being wiser and greater in number, to temporarily, under duress, rely on the minority position, said, how do I know that that's what the word stomach means? Because what does it mean to be stomach? It's like someone who can't walk and is stomach on a cane. Right? It's stomach, meaning temporarily relies, you are collapsing. Right? That's what the word stomach means. And you only do that when bishat hatchak. And he says, what's the maplok? The chachamim say that why do we mention minority positions? so that you can temporarily, even when in a case when you don't have the numbers behind you to uproot the previous law, temporarily, what are you allowed to do? Rely. Temporarily, you can rely on the minority position. If you want to change law permanently, then you need Chachmamim, you need greater, right, a wider consensus and more expertise. But if you temporarily want to what? Rely on it just under the right, just because of exigency, you're allowed to do that. That's what the Chachamim say the purpose of quoting the minority position is. Right? So what's he saying? Let's say a court, a later court, decides the first court is wrong. Is there any reason to mention the minority position according to the Mechat Shama? No. Right? This was Moshe's question, which is, why do I need the minority position? If a later court just thinks the first court was wrong, who cares who said it before them? Right? And what does Mechat Shlomo answer you?
Yes.
Yes, that's exactly right. If you actually think the first court is wrong, then you're always allowed to uproot it. So why do we bother mentioning minority positions in the Mishnah? Because sometimes you don't have the votes to change the law forever. But it's a really, really extreme situation, and therefore it's really important to be able to be makel, let's say, to be lenient.
What is the extreme?
Come up with an extreme circumstance, right? Whatever, yeah, fine, pandemic.
You have to have this makel
position. Yes. Yes. This is a standard mechanism in halakha, that under extreme circumstances, leniency that we wouldn't otherwise accept, we can temporarily accept. Yes.
Is there, line?
Yes, of course there is a line.
What is that?
That's a very complicated question. I've only given many hours to share on that question alone, right? Because obviously not all emergencies are created equal and not all minority positions are created equal, right? There's a difference between saying this is a life and death situation and I'm 51% sure it's usher and 49% sure it's mutter, right? Than saying if I don't do this, I will lose 38 cents, right? And I'm 99% sure it's usher, right? Those are different circumstances, right? Obviously. Right? But where you draw the line is very complicated. But in principle, right, what he says is that the issue here is that to uproot a law, you don't need there to have been another position in the past that agrees with you, right? The only thing you need is what, Moshe? Chachmah. But if you want to not uproot the law, but you temporarily want to pop in like the makel position, but you don't have the votes to overturn the law, then what do you need? A minority position from the past to rely on, right? Because you can't, right? If the previous court said it was 71-0, and you don't have the votes to overturn it, then you can't come up with a new position and rely on it temporarily. But if it was 36-35, right? And you happen not to have the votes to overturn it right now. But everyone agrees that it's, right, it's a really, really bad situation, which requires being makel, then what are you allowed to do? Rely on the minority vote. Okay? Does that logic make sense? I'm not asking you whether you agree. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Right?
Yeah.
Right? Like emergency powers are different than right? Meaning granting the president's emergency powers. Yeah, right. Granting the president's martial powers, emergency powers, right, is different than making amendments to the Constitution, right, right. And it can be more easily undone, right, or executive order. Executive orders are more easily undone, right, right. But they're used in theory, not in practice, right. In theory, they should be used, right. The less. Three presidents notwithstanding, right? They're usually used in emergency, right? And not everything is emergency, right? Don't worry, I'm equal opportunity here, okay? That was three presidents from different parties. Yeah, okay? What?
Oh, now everything is become like gridlock,
so they
kind of
have to. No, they don't have to!
That's a bit of a joke.
They don't have to. Gridlock is not an emergency. It's called government with disagreement.
I'm
It's people like you that are leading to this situation. Oh, if the emergency is we can't agree. That's not an emergency. God, good God. If we can't agree as an emergency, then all of Jewish history is one big emergency. Okay? Try the Knesset. Okay, oh, you're right. We shouldn't have had, currently, the Prime Minister should still be BB, because this is what he should have said. Well, it's an emergency. We've had four elections where no one had just agreed that 61 people, right? There weren't 61 people who agreed to any government. So I have a solution. I'm going to declare myself king, because it's an emergency. We can't agree. No! That's not how emergencies work. Right? Gridlock is bad, but it's not an emergency that warrants declaring yourself king. No, that is a dangerous position, Zach. No. No. Yeah, that would be the other option. No one can agree, so henceforth we dissolve the Israeli government. Desperate times call for desperate measures. That's not how things work. Disagreement is, do you know what you're supposed to do when people disagree? Compromise. Right? Come to an agreement. Not unbelievable. This is exactly the problem, Zach. No. No. Okay? This is what... Fine. Yeah, great. Yeah, exactly. I wonder why that was. Right? Fine. Now, is there a logic to what the Melech HaTzlomo says? Is there a logic? There's a logic. I'm not asking whether you agree. Right? What I'm asking you to notice is something else. What else is important to notice about the Melech HaTzlomo? What doesn't he say? No. He doesn't say that this is limited to rabbinic law. Right? Meaning, his svara is so interesting that you might have missed the more important point there, which is he doesn't distinguish between derais and derabanan. He distinguishes between the parameters in emergencies and in non-emergencies. Right? But he seems to take it as a given that the limitation of chachma minyan might apply even to biblical law, right? He doesn't think that's what the Mishnah is about. Unlike the Rambam, who sees a sharp distinction between derabanan and derait in the Mishnah, he sees a sharp distinction between emergencies and non-emergencies. But when it's not an emergency, what does he seem to think, like Kobe, that Gadol Min HaChachma Minyan has something to say about biblical law, right? Right? You always have to be right. You always have to be careful. Melech HaTzlomo, right? That's not his main point. But Toch Kedei, what emerges is that he seems to not agree with the Rambam, right? He seems to think that Chachma Minyan is correct. But if he doesn't make a differentiation, back to our Gemara. So then when the Gemara says, don't you need Chachma, right? They voted that there's no Tosef Shvi'id. And the Gemara says, well, how can you do that? You don't have Chachma Minyan. Does that mean we're in the level of Derabanan? Or could it be that Yerushalmi is saying, well, this isn't an extenuating circumstance, and then if we're in biblical interpretation, you need to get broader consensus, change the law. Right? I found a physician who doesn't distinguish in Derabanan and Derabanan. So the Melech HaTzlomo, what he actually says is, if you want to change the law, you don't need a minority position, you just need Chachma Minyan, you need a wider consensus and greater expertise in the later court. But if you want to say, but if you don't have the numbers behind you, but you temporarily want to be made ill, you're allowed to do that, but only if there was a minority voice that you can hang your hat on.
That's not what happened in our tomorrow.
Exactly, and that's why you need Chachma Minyan.
Okay.
Right, he's saying you have two options. If you don't have Chachma Minyan and it's an emergency, you can rely on a minority position. If it's not an emergency, then you always need Chachma Minyan.
So
our Gemara is not an emergency, and that's why the Gemara says, even though it's biblical law, you need Chachma Minyan. I mean, according to Melech HaTzlomo, it's very simple. How do you read our Gemara? Is it, has it transitioned from Daraita to Rabbanan from Rabbi Akiva to Rabbi Ishmael?
No. But the Havagin in the Gemara is it's an emergency and the Maskana is not an emergency?
No, you're missing the point. The point is that according to him, under normal circumstances, you need Chachma Minyan, and therefore
the Havamina in
the Gemara? The Havamina is we voted out of existence. Then the Gemara asks, how could you vote it out of existence? You didn't have greater numbers. And you always need that unless it was an emergency.
Yeah, so that should have something to do with the Gemara.
No, it said we voted out of existence, and the Gemara said you can't, you didn't have the numbers. So then the Gemara will say, you're right. And then the Gemara will go on to say why it was they were allowed to. Remember, we haven't even gone to the Gemara's answer, which is, you're right, they didn't have the numbers, and nevertheless they were allowed to. Or we haven't even gone to the Maskana, right? But the point is, at this stage in the Gemara, right? Yeah, but we haven't even gotten to it yet, right? But the point is, that according to Melech Shlomo, we can just read the Gemara as saying that from beginning to end it thought it was Doraita, and then it said, then why does it not apply nowadays? The Gemara says, because we voted that it's Mutter. And then the Gemara says, but how are you allowed to vote that it's Mutter? Even though it's a Doraita, you need Chachma Min, you need a greater consensus, and a wider consensus and greater expertise. Answer, tomorrow. Right?
Do you need the answer to see that fits into different opinions that we're saying?
Not yet.
But don't you need it?
No, no. All I needed was someone to say that the requirement of Chacham Aminyan was true even on biblical law. Because then you don't have to see the Rabbi Shmuel. What do you mean? All he says is that the limitation of Chacham Aminyan can also apply to biblical law.
It's all on his reasoning.
Correct, but this is not... What do you mean? It works perfectly. He says under all circumstances that aren't emergencies, you need more. You need Chacham Aminyan. And the Gemara therefore saying this is an emergency, so why you need Chacham Aminyan, right? Okay, good. Oh yeah, I wanted to do Rav Kook. So let's try to do Rav Kook quickly. Rav Kook gives a different one, which also shares this, but it's very different. He says as follows. He says, Amnam darki lefareish ha-mishnah de-edio. Zolam eskir nivra yachid ben rubin. Ho ben alach alach adev ha-mi rubin. Why do we mention the minority position? So he says as follows. He quotes the whole thing. Let's go down three lines. V'nirin advarim sheshana lo chachamim v'zeh klal gadol v'sidrei ha'ora l'darot. Chachamim said something very important. She'af opi shechaluk chiluk gadol yesh ben haskamot v'zeirot l'horaot shal dinam yotzim midar ke'alimud v'adrashot. The Rambam said there is a difference between d'rabbanan and d'oraita, right? Between decrees and things that we derive from interpretation, right? Right? First he quotes the Rambam. He says the Rambam thinks that by rabbinic law you always need Chachma Minyan, and by Doraita you don't at all. And that's the Rambam, right? He disagrees. And he says, if you skip down a few more lines, he says no. Lo ne'emar, that's only true. Ki im kasher hukhra. The only time that by De'oraita you're allowed to overturn a previous De'oraita without Chachma Aminyan is if it was not unanimous. If it was not unanimous. If he says if it was 40 to 31 and a later court changes the mind on a biblical interpretation, do you need Chachma Aminyan? No. Right? And by Derabanan?
Yes.
Right? But he says, Aval imaitas kamalo horazog visiting adol pidat kulam. I'm skipping down. But let's say it was 71 to 0. As af al pisha davar ba v'derech shlimut drashot nikba halacha zo ki ilu v'itas kamat shal zakana shekvar chal adin shen yachol levatel agin gadol men chachum minyan. So he says as follows, 90% of the time, derabbanan, does it need more chachum minyan? Yes. Does deoraita? No. But there's one case in which deoraita also needs chachum minyan, and that is? When it was 71 to 0.
That's what he means by
Haskama. Haskama, right? Right, 71-0. And he says, normal biblical law doesn't need it. Right? Normal biblical law doesn't need Chachma Aminyan. But unanimous decisions, even though it's biblical interpretation, do need, right? Because think about it, you've got to get over a unanimous decision. That's pretty hard. So what do you need? Chachma Aminyan. Right? You need, right, to get over a unanimous decision, you need to be bigger experts and have wider consensus than the previous Beit Din. Because you're trying to override 71, That's really hard. Right? No, the Rambam says wider consensus among the people who rely on the court. Right? Meaning more chachamim in the generation. Right? I'll give you an example from American law. Right? There's something in American law called, that has been called a super precedent. What's a super precedent? It's where the Supreme Court made a decision. It's really just a decision, but it hasn't been challenged in 200 years, like Marbury versus Madison. And therefore, even though it's a decision, we treat it as if almost, not exactly, but almost as if it's part of the Constitution. Right? Right? Some jurists believe in this type of thing. Okay? Why is that important? Because, right, what's he saying? That not all biblical law, but there's some biblical interpretation that is so entrenched that in order to overturn it, you need chachamim minyan. Not always, but sometimes. Right? Specifically when it was originally decided unanimously. Okay, I'll finish now. Right? So according to Rav Kook, it's not true that always chachamim minyan applies to d'oraita, but does it sometimes? Yes. So just like with Melechet Shlomo, once you think that d'oraita sometimes applies, right? Right? So then it could be that that's our case. Right? And that's where you need chachamim minyan. The point is that according to both of them, you're not forced to do what? To say, just because the Gemara introduces chachamim minyan, that we've transitioned to saying that Tosef Shviit is derabanan. Right? That's my point. Right? And if that's true, then the Yerushalmi might be different than the Bavli. This is what I was getting to. Is once you have this, it might be the Yerushalmi is different than the Bavli, and they think, yes, it's always d'oraita, the whole Gemara is d'oraita. Why then do we have certain limitations on voting it out of existence? Because there are d'oraita cases in which you need chachamim minyan. Right? That's my point. Whatever direction you've gone, but other directions, there are other directions. But my point is that Kobe could be right. That the second you say that chachamim minyan ever applies to d'oraita, our entire Gemara could either be like Rabbi Kiva or some other position based on another pasuk that thinks Tosefet Shviit is d'oraita. And there's no reason to read the Bavli and the Yerushalmi in the same light and introduce Rabbi Shmuel into our Gemara. Right? What we have to do tomorrow is, this is only the question, right? Which is, how could you overturn it? You didn't have chachamim minyan. Tomorrow we have to deal with the answer, which is, you're right, we didn't have chachamim minyan, but no problem, we have a magic solution anyways. What is that magic solution? You'll see tomorrow. Dr. Schroeder is here, so let's go.